We really like working with clients who want to meet their purpose, grow their purpose in anything where marketing can add to people's quality of life, or as we say, marketing for good.
Hello and welcome to the Marketing for Good podcast. I am joined today by Mark Fitzpatrick, who is the Group CEO of People Kind Group based in WA. Thank you for joining me this morning, Mark.
Thanks very much for having me. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, me too. And before we get started, we will acknowledge that we are on traditional lands.
I'm sitting on the lands of the Whadjuk people who are part of the Noongar Nation, and I pay my respects to the elders past and present.
Beautiful. And I come from Darkajang land here on the Central Coast, just north of Sydney. So we have invited Mark to the podcast today to learn more about People Kind Group, which brings together several specialised organisations with decades of community impact. Mark and People Kind are finding their way through a rapidly shifting social services space and are championing a future where people and their outcomes come first. So welcome, Mark. To start us off, can you tell our listeners a little bit about People Kind Group and its unique organisational model?
Yeah, so People Kind Group is an interesting organisation insofar as a group, we've been around for a little over 4 years. And we started from an organisation called Nulson, which is a specialist disability service provider, which is 71 years old.
Mm.
The genesis of the group really started because our CEO and board at the time could see what was happening from an NDIS lens and could see that for organisations who provide high-level support for people with complex care needs with disabilities, that the NDIS was going to be troublesome, if you like, and then sought to see how we could diversify our offerings and did that in a way where we set up or acquired a couple of organisations first to diversify and then sought, oh, we've got some skill sets. How do we continue to use those skill sets for our core but set up organisations that allow us then to broaden those markets and help more people? So today we are an organisation of seven different subsidiaries. So we cover areas such as the complex disability space, as I mentioned, housing, including a not-for-profit real estate agency, which is really interesting.
Wow.
We have a specialist allied health support organisation, a positive behaviour support organisation. We have a justice and out-of-home care organisation in more in the traditional community services space. We also have an organisation that does camps for kids who have often got disabilities, and we have a registered training organisation as well. So we are reasonably diverse.
Yeah.
Not all of those have we set up, but some of those have come on since the group was formed. But if you like, it's a house of brands type of model, similar to, in a commercial sense, a Wesfarmers or one of those sort of big groups of organisations.
Very diverse and so interesting. How do you think it strengthens your impact for the people that you support having that diversified model?
Well, I think what it does is it allows us to have a look at being true to who we were to start with, and I think that's the most important part. We've got to keep that core really strong. And then we had skill sets, if you like, around how we can then help people. So in our disability support work that we did to start, we had housing that was joined with that, for argument's sake. So we knew how to do supported accommodation. So now we can then branch that off, continue to do that core, but then avail that to other people in different ways. Similarly, we have provided therapy supports for people with disability, and now we can provide that, plus then have a look at different markets to support people who need those, whether it's speech or OT or physio supports. They may be people with disabilities, they may be, for example, children with speech delays. So it allows us then to use the core strengths that we had to start to create new organisations that could then create their own culture and operating rhythms and all that sort of stuff to then reach new markets without then having to put the core at risk.
Yeah, that makes sense. So with the multiple organisations under one group, how do you cultivate that cohesive culture that you've spoken about? It comes from this historical place, this historical roots, while still honouring each organisation's unique identity.
Yeah, I think the issue or the key part of that is the cultures in each organisation are different.
Mm.
It's the value set that binds us.
Mm.
And that value set's really, really strong. It guides absolutely everything that we do. And I know often not-for-profits talk about that, but in this case, it's absolutely who we are. But having different organisations allows then those organisations to create that culture. And I think that it allowed us to not have to sit there and go, well, we've got a traditional model in disability services. We wanted a young and vibrant model in allied health therapy, for argument's sake. And the cultures in terms of the way that we did that were slightly different. But the value set around helping people, the core part of what we do around collaboration, the core part around respect, all of those values are very strongly aligned. And that's really great because it allows us to set up, again, for different markets, rather than trying to say we've got one culture across so many dispersed parts of our organisation. It allows those cultures to thrive, but also do it in the way that we all buy into. So it's slightly different than doing it under one single entity. It is more about making sure that we can be fit for purpose for the areas that we work within and fit for purpose around the clients that we've got, but understand how we can magnify what that looks like. And I suppose the biggest part of that is making sure that then we can have organisations that work together to solve some issues and ideally wicked problems too.
I love it that you brought it back to, you know, that value set, and you did touch on, you know, people and community and the value of respect. Could you talk a little bit more to the value set that binds those seven organisations?
Yeah, so the values are actually really core to who we are, and making sure that we understand that we come from a position where everything that we do is about helping people. So that compassionate is one of our values. It's not necessarily just the way that we do us or the fact that we provide services to people. It's very much about the way that we treat people. We treat other parts of the sector. We treat each other as staff. That's a really important one. And then we're respectful in doing that. We understand, even for the people who've been part of NULSUM, which is our legacy organisation for 40 to 50 years, that they've got family and connections, and we've got to understand it's not just the person that we help, it's actually that ecosystem that sits around them. So we've got to be respectful for that, and we've got to do that collaboratively. Never are we the sole support for any person in this life. So how do we actually make sure that we can be really clear about working together with others and be that partner that people want to work with? I think that's a really critical point for us. The next value that we have is resilient. And I think that goes to show in terms of the organisation that we are, we've tried to create some resiliency around our business model, but also around the people that we are. We have to be here for other people. We have to be here tomorrow. We've got to be resilient to be able to do that. We've got to support our people in terms of their own resilience to meet the needs of the clients that they have every day, understanding that in some cases those clients are going to be long-term and then may pass away. So how do we actually create really strong cultures around supporting our people to ensure that they love their work, can come to work, but also then get really good outcomes? And then when things probably don't end up the way that we ultimately would like, then we can hold them in a really good space.
Mm.
And that's really important. And the other one for us, the last value that we have is about courage. So we've got to do the right thing. And particularly in the world that we're dealing with, and particularly in the disability space, we've got to be able to stand up also for the people that we serve and say, well, this isn't working the way that we need to. So our advocacy, trying to create models that actually do work, finding ways to deliver those models, even though it might not be the flavour of the month in terms of government policy,
mm-hmm.
and influence that plus our community and tell our story as much as we can. So that means that we can get the best possible outcome for people.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. That, you know, gives a lot of a lot of background and really describes the work that you do. I wonder if you could tell us a story or an example that sort of demonstrates what People Kind is all about.
Yeah. Oh, there's many.
I'm sure there is.
Let me think of one. So I've been in the organization for 12 months and you stand on the shoulders of giants, I think is a nice phrase that people often use. And that's where I'm sitting in this. I have to say that in WA particularly, maybe it's an emerging issue where the strength of the group can be shown in how it can tackle issues. So one of the areas that we're looking at the moment is in WA, our hospital system is facing significant wait times, ambulance ramping at record levels. I think it's pretty much the same across the country.
Yeah.
And we're not a health provider.
Yeah.
But, and I use the word but intentionally, we do have this history of providing housing. And now what we're seeing in the disability space is that traditional housing model change. And so some of that housing stock that we had before is being vacated by people with disability going into new stock. So how can we use that housing to provide a solution? And when I have a look at the skills that we've got across the group, regardless of where they come from and which organisation, we've got nursing staff, care staff, case management staff, if you want to use that phrase, allied health staff, support staff for people at the pointy end of need, and a whole range of positive behaviour support staff. So we can then potentially lend those skill sets to try and solve a problem. So at the moment, we're talking with different parts of our health system about co-designing processes so we can get people out of either long stay beds or beds that they shouldn't be in. They might not just be weight bearing. So how do we use our skill set to support people who are sitting in hospital beds that potentially or clinically don't need to be there? And then we can provide some support so then they can step out of hospital and then step back into their own homes and do that in a way where then it frees up hospital beds. So in that regard, I've got five of our organizations all working together with different parts of the health system about, well, how do we do this? What does it look like? And this is not necessarily about us going and creating a new program. This is just about us stepping into a space where we can see that the community needs some support. Mm-hmm. We can see that there is a system that's hemorrhaging. How do we add a little bit to that? What does that look like for us? And then there's other examples where having a not-for-profit real estate agency is really interesting. It's really quite rare. And then how can we actually use tax rulings from the ATO to benefit landlords where, let's say for argument's sake, we can, let's say a property is rented for $700 a week normally. We can then offer it for, a family or a mum with kids escaping domestic violence and provide it for $300 a week. And so then the $400 a week is a donation, basically. So it gets a tax receipt from us to then for the owner of that property. And then we can help a family who otherwise there's 11,000 people on the wait list for state housing in this state. And I think there's a 0.2% vacancy rates in rental. So how do we actually tap into that philanthropic landlord type of model to try and solve, again, another issue that sits in the community? And we're not domestic violence support people, but we have a housing need and we do supportive housing very, very well. So these are sort of examples of how we're trying to use the group to then build those relationships to get the possible outcomes for people in our community where we know that those systems aren't working as well as what they've been intended to.
There's such a strength in the collaboration between the different organisations under the umbrella of People Kind, isn't there? And the fact that you touched on co-design as well, we work in that space quite a bit as well, working with different communities in helping to, build and shape and respond to a whole range of issues happening in society. I can really hear the strength of that network and how they can step into certain spaces.
Yeah, I think it's for us as well. I mean, the benefit for, say, government then is it doesn't have to go and source seven organizations, or they can, they can come in and go, oh, all right, well, Mark, can you, is there a skill set that you've got to help with this? And then we've got to have a look at that without ego. I mean, we can sit there and want to help everybody, and we do want to help everybody, but we'll only step into something where we can add value to that equation, not to come in and take over or be a white knight or anything like that. And for other organizations as well, we've got obviously some skills and backgrounds of supporting our existing orgs so they can sit there and go, oh, hang on a sec, how do we connect with this? What does this look like? And how do we actually value? So it's not necessarily just government that can be a beneficiary to try and provide a single point of reference. It might be other organizations which have complementary strengths to us.
No, I love that. I'm also intrigued to hear how you balance your purpose and the social impact with the commercial and the financial realities of running a not-for-profit.
That's a fascinating one, and it's one that we've all got to try and deal with. And I've been very fortunate, I suppose, across my career of having organizations that have done that really, really well. And this is no different. So a lot of the work that we do is very much about us being good at what we do, and that volume will come. We're not a massive write a grant for 3 years and then see how you go type of organization, although parts of what we do are into that space. And I think it provides a balance and a mix of service delivery. For us, it's been very clear about what do we get funded for? What's the cost of us doing our mission in addition to that? And how do we find the funds for it? So it's not an either or, it's often an and. How do we be really clear about what we do? And from the group's perspective, how do we provide value to our subsidiaries? So where there are significant economies of scale, how do we provide that? So we've got a very low cost point for support services like IT or payroll services. And if they're small organizations, how do we provide the supports for their marketing or their people and culture work? So we can be very fit for purpose in some orgs and very broad in others to provide that support, which they otherwise would struggle to fund, which then gives them more money to do the work that they should be doing. So there's that nice balance around providing that back-end help, as well as then also being really clear and supporting our organizations to understand how they're funded, how do we do things that aren't funded, and making sure that we then do great partnerships with whether that's philanthropists or other parts of government or different orgs to find solutions to problems as opposed to not doing something because there's no money.
Yeah, that's a really good explanation. I love the fact that you touched on it's not an or, it's an and. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You've touched on too that you've been with PeopleClient for the last 12 months. I'm interested, and I'm sure the listeners are, to learn about your own professional journey and why did the role of Group CEO feel like the right next step for you?
Yeah. Well, the group of us, the group CEO role, sorry, doesn't come up very often. It's one of those things that is really unique in our sector. And I've watched it from the outside. So knowing the previous CEO here for about, I was going to say 14, 15 years, and understanding the evolution of the organization from a distance, it's a really fascinating model to sort of have a look at. When I was provided with the opportunity, it was really around, again, what skill sets do I have? So previous to this role, I was in a CEO for an organization called Telethon Speech and Hearing. So there's an akin service delivery part where TSH does speech and allied health clinics and audiology clinics, as do we in terms of our Super U business. For us, then it's also understanding a little bit around the housing space with I used to be CEO prior to TSH for Vinnies and had a housing overlay with that, with some mental health services, homelessness, other things. And so you can see how there are different sort of touch points within the group that allowed me to have, I was always say, enough knowledge to be dangerous, but enough knowledge to feel comfortable to step in so you can have a look at how you can add value to those organizations. I do have to say, though, and I've written a LinkedIn post on this, it's like going from the cockpit to the flight tower.
Okay.
So in the cockpit, you're responsible for the how the plane's flying, or all the passengers you've got that sit in that sort of space, and the crew that you have. But in the new role, in terms of group CEO, it's very much making sure that all the planes can take off and land as they need to, and get repaired if they need to, or make sure that we fuel them the proper way. So it's all of those bits where you need to have a look at the horizon as well as what's happening down on the runway. So it's a fascinating different organization, and it's one full of challenges in terms of the role, but it is one of the roles that I absolutely love, because you can help organizations make a difference, and you can help practitioners, whether they're our managing directors or other staff, grow their skill sets and be exposed to different things, and help them build their own organizations to be the best possible versions of themselves.
Yeah, I love that. I love that analogy. We are seeing a growing number of organizations exploring collaborative models and group structures similar to PeopleKind. From your experience, what are the key ingredients that make these models work, both culturally and operationally?
In answering that, I suppose I don't want to give the perception that this has all been roses and everything worked well from the start. Our organization set up four startups, and I'm not sure our board would do that again, particularly given they're all running at the same time. And there is a challenge of making sure that each of those organizations can have enough maturity in them, in themselves, and how do you define and grow that? What we have done really well, I think, is be really clear about what the 1, 3, 5 year horizons look like. So we understand when we set up a new organizations about the cost that that has, how do we actually build that? And then how do we make sure that we have a skill set to manage what that looks like? It doesn't have to be directly, exactly what we do now, but it has to be, do we have a skill set to make this work? The key part of the group, which I think is really successful, though, is what I mentioned before. If we tried to set up a full allied health clinic-based organization that we have with Super within our legacy organization, and we wanted it to be fun and vibrant and new and doing therapy differently, reimagining therapy is what we use as our tagline, then that wouldn't have worked. So understanding that we have a great skill set in that context with that business, but also understanding that we've got skill sets in other areas, and how do we grow that to allow each of those personalities of those organizations to shine, I think is really important. Because sometimes you try it within your own organization and there's this tension or this fit that doesn't necessarily work. But then we were able to step out of that and go, okay, well, we've got this organization that is highly successful, really well run, 71-year history. Let's make sure we protect it. Now we've got these other organizations which are startups, but then let's make sure that we invest in them. But what's the vision? How do we make sure we communicate that? What do we want this to look like and feel like? And I think the feeling part of that's actually really important and often underplayed. So then we can then get really good outcomes, so where we don't put the things that we started with at risk. And then you can start to build and create your own spaces where you can have overlaps and support sharing of learnings and bringing people together to understand what that looks like. But you don't then have to make sure that everything fits under the same bucket, so to speak. And then it allows, I think, that flexibility. We do know that we are, if you like, new, and people are going, well, that's an interesting model. So it does bring a bit of attention. Which is nice, and sometimes you've got to make sure you live up to that too. And we do have organizations come and say to us, "Oh, can we join the group?" And we've got to make sure that that again is a fit for purpose sort of decision in terms of making sure that we again have the skill sets to support them to be the best versions of themselves. And I often use the phrase, and I used it before, about we've got to check our own ego at the door when we do that too. So I think my advice to anyone looking to do a group model would be very deliberate Be really clear about what organizations you're going to either bring in and the cultures that you want and how you set that up from the different parts of what you do, because often it's the culture that kills M&As, and M&A is a dirty word in our sector largely anyway. But if there are those sorts of things, and how do you do it where you can actually retain the best parts of what you've got and then do that to build collective strength? So you don't then have to have a single necessarily way you can be fit for purpose. And I think the fit for purpose piece is really, really critical.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of leads me on to my next question around leadership and what leadership principle you hold tightly as the group CEO, something that maybe guides you in how you show up for your teams and the people that you support.
I think there has to be an authenticity in what we do. I honestly believe we are here on this planet to make the world a better place than what we find it. And that is part of my DNA. And I get immense joy. And I say that intentionally. It's immense joy from watching other people succeed. And when you've had a hand in allowing that to happen, then that, I don't know, there's an intrinsic, absolutely feel good part to that. So my leadership really is around how do we create really good environments for people to thrive? How do we be fit for purpose in doing that? So we don't, I look at guiding principles a lot, and how do we coach people around how do we make decisions, and how do those decisions sometimes don't work, but sometimes they do, and how do we actually use principles to guide that as opposed to rules? I think sometimes rules stifle effective leadership. But I think the key thing for me is around being contextually savvy. How do you actually understand what's going on for different parts and then be able to lean in when you need to and step back when you don't? So this is, it's an interesting challenge sometimes because you don't want things to go off the rails. And I think for me, it's around creating, it's creating environments that people can thrive in is the critical part to summarize.
Looking ahead, what are the key priorities or new directions for PeopleKind over the next few years?
It's you've timed it beautifully. We're actually going through our strategic planning process at the
Oh,
moment. So
yes.
it's not just us, but it doesn't tell me sitting there. What does the future look like? We honestly believe that we have the ability to shape our society in a really positive way. Each of our organizations, we are going to continue to invest in to make sure that we can build that impact the best way it can be. And we'll do that by, at a group level, providing the best possible supports to see them grow. We'll also have a look at how do we continue to try and solve those issues that sit in our community where they're challenging, and what skills do we bring to that? And that may involve organisations coming in part of the group as well, to add to that. So at some point in the future, I'm sure that that's about to happen. But really for us, for now, is making sure that we've got the good solid foundations to enable that impact to continue to grow. How do we do that in partnering really well with different parts of our community? Because I think that's the way that we can have success. And then how do we continue to build on our strengths? Because we don't need to be all things to all people. And I think when people chase the money to do that, sort of, oh, my client needs, therefore I shall, as opposed to our client needs, how are those needs best met? Then I think some organizations get into trouble, and we don't want to be one of those.
Well, Mark, that brings us to the end of our chat today. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. So thank you so much for sharing your journey and the journey of PeopleKind on our podcast. Where can people find PeopleKind Group if they want to learn more about the work that you do?
Yeah, so our website is peoplekind.org.au. But also have a look at us on key platforms like our socials. LinkedIn is probably the best one for those involved in business, and obviously Instagram and others. And all of our subsidiaries have their own social media and other profiles, but you can use our gateway of peoplekind.org.au to find those too.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. Loved the chat.
We really like working with clients who want to meet their purpose, grow their purpose in anything where marketing can add to people's quality of life, or as we say, marketing for good.